did you know the human psyche can only last for like 72 hours with zero stimulus? So this is a Wayward Podcast. I am your usual host, Toshi, and my usual co-host, Sarah, has been on a hunting trip and hasn't been back for a few days. So today I've brought on a guest, my neighbor, and a teacher at ECC. I've brought on my friend, good friend, Jeff.
Hi, everybody.
And this is a podcast where we basically talk about living in Japan, and it's a Japan-centric podcast. Mm-hmm. We have a tendency to spill over into other geek territories. But so let's hear a little about yourself. How long have you been living here?
350 years, okay. It seems like, give or take. If you want me to be specific, yeah, just over 17 years.
Wow, 17?
17. I came on July 21st,
You're actually a rarity in that case.
Yeah,
because yeah, we mentioned on a previous podcast that most people tend to last about 5 or so years before they move back to the States or somewhere else.
About the breaking point, usually.
So 17 years.
17. Yeah, not 70. No, not quite that old yet.
How long? How did that come about? Like, you're moving to Japan. What was
the inspiration?
Yeah.
Reader's Digest short story, a version of it. In junior high school, got interested in things Japanese from an old TV show called Shogun. It was a James Clavell novelization or novel of the week-long drama that was on TV, and just thought it was really cool. It was your basic jidaigeki. You know, sort of thing. And with all the costumes and, you know, you had Toshiro Mifune as the main sort of Tokugawa character in there. And, of course, he was, you know, had the wonderful, you know, samurai attitude. And just got interested in Japan at that point. Starting university as a music composition major, I started studying world music and getting into traditional Japanese music and learning Koto and Shakuhachi and a little bit of the language and just from there, kind of decided.
Koto and shakuhachi are basically the sort of the string.
Well,
the
Koto is a sort of, technically it's a type of zither, but so harpish sort of instrument. And shakuhachi is a bamboo four-hole flute sort of thing that is really hard to play.
Apparently so, yeah.
Extremely hard, yeah. And spent about 7 years with that kind of in the back of my mind, saying, I want to come to Japan. Eventually said, look, I just want to come. Went back to university to get an English degree, actually, specifically to come to Japan.
Oh, okay.
And got on the JET program, which, if you don't know what that is, Japan Exchange and Teaching Program.
Yes, okay.
From the Board of Education, where they get people for a year, up to 3 years, I think, is still the total, and send you to various places in Japan. Mm-hmm. And you teach at junior high schools, elementary schools, do some sort of community sort of things. And, they sent me, I asked for some of the suburbs, basically, of Tokyo, Kanagawa Prefecture or Saitama, and they sent me to the northern mountains of Gunma. And for anybody who doesn't know where that is, way past the boonies. Yeah, that's, you know, one 7-Eleven and one grocery store in the whole town.
And population of about,
I don't know, a few hundred maybe, living population. Yeah, it's mostly a tourist place. They have onsens, you know, the hot springs, and that sort of thing. There, ski resorts. But being from Miami, ski resort isn't something that I have a lot of experience with.
How did you end up coming to Tokyo?
Well, my ex, her family lives in Tokyo. And so I got, well, short story here, got engaged to a Japanese girl while I was at university. And so that cemented the coming to Japan part of it. I came, went up to the boonies. She came down to Tokyo with her family And about 6 months into it, we ended up getting married, which, of course, in Japan is a paperwork, basically is all it is.
So, yeah, you don't holding like the ceremony is
it's optional. I mean, you can do it, and we I did my second marriage. I know TMI here, guys, but oh, but anyway, so then we moved down to the Machida area, which is a suburb, western suburb of Tokyo,
which is where we live now.
Where we live right now, and you know, one thing led to another. Life went in different directions, and I'm still here.
Yeah. Have you been working at the same place at ECC the whole time, or
I started working at ECC in the fall of '98, so pretty much, pretty much. I did the year at JET program. In fact, actually, did the audition or the audition, the interview for ECC before I was finished with my JET contract, but couldn't start then without just leaving JET, and I wasn't going to do that. And so I had to work at a little mom-and-pop English conversation school for a few months and then came on to ECC.
And so ECC is basically they have different sort of schools or, I guess, classes. So what is your –
They do I'm mainly a kids person. Yeah. I mainly work with the kids from a year and a half up to 12, although I do a handful of adult classes every week. Mm-hmm. And I also work at kindergartens. I'm a visiting teacher at kindergartens a couple times a week, which is insanity on a stick, let me tell you.
How do 30... Japanese kids differ from American kids?
Oh, they're much more accurate with the finger and the sphincter. That's how they got that thing right down, boy. Pow!
Oh, yeah, there's that. Yeah, the,
yeah man.
What
it's called concho.
You use two index fingers together and you aim for the person's
butthole. And it's a proctology exam from hell, let me tell you guys. Yeah. I don't know, can I say that on here?
Yeah, that's fine. Oh, okay, good. It's free swearing, so go
ahead. Oh, great.
So, wow.
Oh, yeah, so, it's like combat. You pretty much keep your back to the wall and, keep your eyes unfocused for any movement around you, that sort of thing.
Obviously it's different age groups, there's different methods, but, how do you teach a different language to somebody? How do you teach English to somebody who doesn't understand it?
A lot of gestures. Mm-hmm. A lot of obviously levels. You've got every level from either the adults or the kids. And like I said, when I teach a year and a half old, 2-year-old kids, they can barely speak Japanese. Mm-hmm. Forget about English. So you start with you show them a color and you say the word and you get their parents who are with them in those baby classes to say the word. And they look at you like a deer in the headlights of an oncoming car for about a half an hour. And after a few classes of that, they start to be, to parrot you with colors and numbers and, the ABCs and the basics. And you just kind of build from there. With the adults, most people in Japan have had English from at least junior high school, and nowadays from kindergarten.
Yeah, it's part of the curriculum. It's the basic. Yeah, I had it back in, in 92, 93, when I was in junior high. That was part of the school curriculum.
Right,
you had to learn English.
Right.
It wasn't like a thing like you can learn French, you can learn German.
If
you learn English.
Have to learn English, yes. Yeah. English is considered the universal language around here.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, funny story, when I was in Gunma, one of the things that you have to do on this program is whenever they need a sort of gaijin translator or something like that, even if your Japanese isn't very good, you still get stuck with that. Well, we had summer ski jump. Yeah, put those words together. Summer ski jump competition on that sort of grassy plastic thing they use for ski jumps in the summer.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So they had competitors from all over Europe, Germany and Sweden and France and all over the place. And they brought me in to translate, which would have been great if any of those people had spoken English.
Wow. Yeah. It's kind of like, that's the thing also, like in Japan, it's like, if you're a foreigner, it's expected you speak English.
Yeah.
It's like, even if you don't.
Right.
You're from Slovakia. You don't speak a lick of English, but if you don't look Japanese, you must speak English, this sort of thing.
So basically, if there was any instructions they wanted me to give to the coaches from the other team, they would tell me in Japanese, and I would turn, look at them, and point. which is a similar thing. Go off on a tangent here, but
we go on a lot of tangents. Oh,
okay, well, let's go down the yellow brick road here for a little bit. I was once hired to help out on a TV show with a famous former sumo, Konishiki. Anybody who knows Japan knows Big Fat Konishiki.
Yeah, he went after he quit sumo. He went by the his he had official like Konishiki, like the kanji name, but he became a, I guess you could say, celebrity.
Right,
and his name wasn't then written in English.
Konishiki.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so I was brought on into the TV studio to help the kids in this little show. It was about 5-episode show with their English. And one of the funny things the director would do is he would come up to me and say, okay, I'd like you to tell Mr. Konishiki that when we cue him, he should do blah, 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 you know, look to the left, look to the right. And he was standing right behind me. Now, the director is telling me this in English.
Yeah.
All right. Konishiki's from Hawaii.
Yeah.
All right. And he's fluent in both languages, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he's telling me, and I basically turn around and say, you got that? And he looks at me and he goes, yeah, right. Okay, so left, right, yeah, okay. You know, so, I mean, they do stuff sometimes in here where you just kind of look at each other and you go, you know, you pull the Homer Simpson, doh! Yeah. You know, sort of thing. But back to teaching English, you know, like I said, you get all levels. I mean, you get people who went through English all through junior high school and you say, how are you? And they go, eh, you know, they haven't a clue what you're talking about.
I've been told that Japan, like Japanese, the standard schools, they don't teach English. They teach Japanese and the difference between Japanese and other languages, basically. Like, yeah. They're supposedly teaching you Quoty Fingers English.
Right.
But what they're basically doing is teaching you the difference between Japanese grammar and sentence structure and other languages.
Pretty much. Well, you get a lot of teachers that are the English teachers that cannot speak English pretty much at all. I mean, they're in that low level of English. You know, they come in and they open the textbook and they put on a tape.
Yeah.
And
that was a class, like when I was using Quoty Fingers and learning English in school. Yeah, that was a class I aced. But when I was learning English, like, I was the only fluent English speaker. Of course, my Japanese was hell, but I was a fluent English speaker, and you know, the teacher would have me read stuff, and like, you know, I'd sit and stand in front of the class and like read this, you know, the lines, and you know, Jill went to school one day, and like that whole thing is, and the teacher would just basically go like that, just point at me and go like that, like,
what he said,
So
I mean, I had that experience working in the schools when I was with JET program, what's called an ALT, or assistant language teacher, where you go in with the Japanese teacher, and you might use about once a week in each class, and you run an activity, you go through and drill the kids on whatever it is they're working on at the time. And in worse schools, you sort of end up as the police officer. If you want me to go off on a tangent again,
go
here.
Ahead.
Yeah, I was when I first came to ECC, the English school, they actually had an ALT program, like the JET program, and I came on in that program and ended up being the trainer for it after a year. And we had a teacher call us up and say, I am not going back to this school. I don't care what you do. I will quit completely if you make me go back to this school.
Did they give a reason?
Oh, yeah, I found out. Well, they sent me to this school the next day to see what was going on. And so I get into this school. Can I say the name of the school? Or we don't want to go there. Is that a bad neighborhood?
Well, you're a freak. I mean, like, nobody's going to know it.
Okay, so. Machida Daisan Chugako, Machida number 3 Junior High
one.
School. You know that one? Yeah.
I know that one.
Oh, man, that place is legend, man. I mean, that is just... And so anyway, I get into this place, and it's just, you know, kids running around all over the place in the corridor. In Japan, for those who don't know, there's a teacher's room. It's not like in the States where a teacher has their room and the kids come to your room. Well, the kids have their room and you go to their room.
Yeah.
So usually in the morning, there's a teacher's meeting and the principal and everybody's there. But you know, as soon as the teacher's meeting was over, principal leaves. Principal didn't even stick around in a school. And just absolute chaos. I mean, I had sitting in the teacher's room, we had a kid run into the teacher's room screaming, which is just absolutely absurd. In Japan, before you come in the teacher's room, you have to bow and you say, excuse me, and then you know, you get permission to come in first.
Yeah, formalities.
The formalities, yeah, which are always going on. Yeah. And so this kid storms into yelling about something, grabs one of the male teachers by his shirt, like he was going to, you know, punch him or something like that, right? So I see this, and I get up, and I go for the kid, right? And he sees me coming, of course, and he hightails it out the door. And the male, the male teacher looks at me and is like, don't tell anybody what just happened. I'm like, what, do you have a spinal column? What is your deal? And all the teachers were like that. So I got the English teacher, this little petite lady, says, you know, in this sort of mousy voice, please help me. You know, it's like the fly, right? Help me, the spider is coming. And so I go into her classroom, and it's just mayhem. I mean, you think, you know, we have this stereotype in America that the Japanese kids and youngsters are the most well-behaved. No, one of the things...
It depends on the school.
it's the thing about Japan. I mean, for anybody who's never really been here or lived here, Japan is not only a country of extremes, it's a country of extreme extremes. There's nothing in the middle. You even have kids who will sit there and not make a sound, even if, you know, the monster earthquake happens. And you'll have other kids that are just off the charts.
Literally bouncing off the wall.
Literally, yeah. Literally. So, yeah.
That also, I think, has to do with the fact that Japan went through this time, has gone through this period, the Yutori period,
okay,
where basically they were saying, we're being too strict on our kids.
Uh-huh.
And it used to be like a big thing. I used to brag about this for some reason, but like Japan, it used to be every week was like 6 day weeks. Like,
right. Yeah.
School.
Yeah.
You went to school on Saturdays.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that was for a kid who grew up in America. It was, right, it was like fascinating. And so I would go, like, when I'd visit Japan, I'd go to school on Saturdays. Holy shit. And right, I'd go back and I'd brag about it. Okay. It's like, we go to school on Saturdays. And, you know, they were really strict. Like, there was, you know, hitting students in school.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. Regular, yeah, thing. Even to an extent when I first got here.
Yeah. Like, the teachers were given the leeway to discipline.
Yeah.
The kids as they saw fit.
Right.
And some of it is, I think, a little extreme. There are teachers who get carried away. There's some teachers who get, you know, kind of get full of themselves. But at the same time, they brought it, as you said, to the other extreme.
The pendulum swung from one side, like, all the way to the other,
like,
side.
They were saying, like, we're being too strict on our kids. And so they went really lax. It became like 5 day weeks. I think like they'd like one or 2 weeks a month. They'd like, or like every other week they'd go have Saturdays, but Saturdays are like a short day.
Well, it depends a lot on the school districts. True. And the schools. Yeah. I mean, there's a, just like in the States, there's a big variation between districts.
And another huge thing was like the power balance shifted from the teachers to the kids.
To the kids.
And
yeah,
by proxy to the parents. And so the word monster parent became a trending word for parent, because, you know, the teachers could no longer punish the kids. They couldn't stop them. Like, if two kids were wailing on each other, the teacher cannot physically stop them.
Yeah.
There's a risk that the kid will say the teacher hurt them.
Right.
And the teacher basically either gets suspended or gets a cut in pay or loses their job.
Yeah. That's the way it is in the U.S.
Yeah.
You know, I taught sixth grade English before coming here in the U.S. It's usually, now, normally, again, one of the things about Japan is just because there's a rule doesn't mean anybody's going to bother to enforce it here. You have a lot of that. Where isn't there a rule against that? Yeah, there is. It just nobody enforces it. So you do have, in schools, if something happens, you do have teachers who will, like, the thing in Japan is to smack some kid over the head, right? Like, with something relatively soft.
Yeah.
Okay, and that happens all the time. And I think if two kids were brawling, a male teacher would generally pull them apart and nothing would come of it, to the extent, because you don't have the powerful lawyers and things like that here that you have in the States.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I mean,
and for a while it was called the Yutori Plan, I think it was, like, basically, Yutori basically means lax, I guess you could call it.
Sort of laid back.
And that generation slowly grew up, and then the government realized, oh, we're creating a bunch of slack-offs. and like who it's become a thing now, and it's not wholly all-encompassing,
no,
but it's become a kind of thing where like people from that generation are seen as
uncultured.
Uncultured, yeah, not well structured,
yeah,
bad on discipline. Like they handle discipline very poorly.
Yeah.
They're seen as sort of wild cards. You don't
right,
like,
yeah.
Like they're it's like kids who grew up in that generation who go get a new job,
mm-hmm.
It's very risky that they'll quit in the first week.
Right.
It's the sort of thing it's looked at. And so the government basically said, let's go back, sort of, let's reel that back a bit.
Right.
Get a little bit more. We don't want like corporal punishment in the schools or anything like that, but we, you know, get a little bit stricter, sort of, because not only were the kids growing up to be, you know, underdeveloped in a lot of ways, but they weren't as educated.
Right, no, because like there was too much chaos going on.
They weren't getting the education they needed. And so the government said, you know, we need to fix this. And that ended up really fucking over the very last members of that generation, the Itori generation, because they didn't have the credits, like the necessary credits to like graduate anymore.
Right,
like
right.
They changed the rules, like you need to go to school this many days. And then
they
hadn't been doing that because they didn't have to. And it was just like, you fucked us sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that was chaos.
Yeah.
In a hat. Yeah. And so, and that we're still feeling the effects of that in a very, I think, negative way.
Yeah. Well, for quite some time now, I think Japan has been socially adjusting to sort of the 21st century.
Yeah.
You know, late 20th century, 21st century in a lot of ways. Oh yeah, absolutely. It still is. And it's still finding its way around and trying to preserve what people think of as traditional Japan, but still integrating things from outside that they need to or that are seem to be good ideas and, you know, and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, Japan is still in flux, but there's a lot of, I mean, Japan, I think, more than any other place I've certainly been to, a lot of thinking about, well, tradition. We have to keep Japanese. I mean, we have to keep whatever it is that we're doing still has to be Japanese.
The culture the cultural significance of culture is very strong.
Yeah, very much. Very much. So, you know, and you have this always this sort of separation between what is Japanese and what isn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's something.
So
yeah.
That's they're having trouble reconciling that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they're not, like, I've talked about this before, but they're not overtly racist, but they're racist. I say this time and time again. It's a term I call in the club.
Well, uchi, you know. Yeah, inside if you're
Japanese,
or outside.
Yeah, if you're Japanese, you're in the club. If you're not Japanese,
you can't be. Forever gaijin.
You're never in the club.
You're never in the club, right. Well, you know, a friend of mine once asked me after I'd been in Japan a few years coming home, and he says, well, what are Japanese people really like? I said, you know what? I don't know. Because wherever I go, there's always one gaijin in the room.
Yeah.
Right?
And
so,
and then it's that sort of like, you know, peas in a pod sort of thing.
Yeah. Or like, you know, when I've been involved in cultural activities where I was the only gaijin, like Shorinji Kenpo, you know, for several years, and being the only foreigner in this very Japanese activity, you know, very Zen-oriented, very traditional. Well, like I said, traditional. It was World War II, but what has become, you know, very ownership, you know, kind of Japanese ownership sort of philosophy and so forth. And a lot of times, they just didn't know what to do with me. I felt more like a mascot than one of the other. You know, I'm the pet gaijin. I'm like, look, we got a gaijin. You know, rather than, you know, things like, you have your book of techniques that you have to learn. And I didn't get mine for like 3 months. I was like, well, you know, I'm not just kind of here, you know, picking my sphincter for the hell of it here. I'd kind of like to go through in advance. Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, here's your curriculum book. Okay. You know, so, yeah, it's definitely not a place if you, and I've heard some young people, young teachers come over and say, oh, I'm going to come over here. I'm going to be really Japanese. No, you're not. you're going to get frustrated. If you come in and think that at some point you're going to be accepted 100%, you're not.
Yeah, that sort of gorillas in the midst sort of thing, that's
not really going to happen. Yeah, it's really not going to happen. Now, there are advantages to that not happening. I mean, on the flip side of it, we gaijin get away with things sometimes that other people can't, you know.
It's a very fortunate one of the little perks of the perks of the genetics, I think.
Yeah. Well, see, you don't, because you're a stealth gaijin here.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm the one who like messes up everybody's radar.
Yes.
Like the you know, the bouncer's like, do I let this guy in? He looks legit. go on in and let's me in, and then I just like mess up the whole place and I'm throwing drinks everywhere. So,
Yeah, you're the wild card that scares everybody. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you're obviously gaijin.
Interesting thing though is that people like me also have a tendency to flock together for some reason.
Oh yeah,
it's really weird. Like I've had on like 3 or 4 occasions, I've out of the blue. Randomly, either I've talked to somebody or somebody who's talked to me, who is much like myself, born raised, like a foreigner, but genetically Japanese.
Right.
Like out of the blue, like I was in a convenience store one day, and I forget what I was picking up snacks or something, and this person like walks up to me and suddenly, like out of the blue, speaking in English, like I'm trying to get tickets to go to the Ghibli Museum.
Right.
Can you help me out? And I'm just like, sure. right over here. Well, you do it on this machine over here, and you go here, you set the date here. And it's like, and
they just somehow knew that you would speak English.
I don't know. I don't even think they knew. I think they were just expecting just calling for help anywhere and just by coincidence it was me. Right. That happened to me once too.
There is no coincidence. Law of attraction. You attract them to you.
Yeah,
you
know, I've done it too. Like I was trying to find a specific line. This is when I was like 11 or 12 years old. Mm-hmm. I was lost in a train station trying to find my line. Mm-hmm. And I walked up to someone and I asked them in Japanese, like, how do I get to this line? And they're like, oh, I can take you. You just go with it. Yeah. And they're speaking in Japanese.
Right.
And, so doing like, and then they suddenly asked me, do you speak English? And we just broke out into conversation from there.
Right.
It was really weird.
Well, I remember the first time that not the first time we met, but the first time you spoke English. I mean, you were working at the
karaoke
parlor, and
yeah,
I was coming in to practice.
Met, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I'm paying for the thing, and I would come in there with my trumpet or something and practice, and all of a sudden you say, hey, are you in a band? I went, whoa. Like, you know,
well, that's one of the other things about like being and like I said, like sort of gravitating towards each other.
Yeah.
For someone like me, you kind of hungry. You get this sort of like craving of like contact with a foreigner.
Yeah.
Like so, you kind of it's like grasping at straws in a way. Like anytime you run into somebody who speaks English, you want to talk with them.
Right.
It was a rarity. Like I was working at a karaoke place and.
Yeah.
Generally, Japanese people would come in, and but I had a sort of a reputation of being friendly with the customers, like not in a bad way, but strike up conversations that weren't business related.
Right.
I would like you know and
like people normally do in the States, but here. Yeah.
I would get to know my customers.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, I'd like to say that was because of me that we got several regulars, but and you came in, and I think it wasn't the first time. You came
no, out. it was third or fourth time. Yeah,
but like, I noticed this guy's a regular. He's obviously an American, and he's you know brings his trumpet, and so I just randomly struck up,
and it just all of a sudden it was pow. Yeah, okay, cool, okay, and then end up finding you know similar geeky tastes and things like that.
You said you going into your background, your further background, you used to work in a comic store?
Yeah, I worked in a comic shop in Tallahassee, Florida when I was going to Florida State. Actually I was at that time I was sort of brought in by the comic book owner as being the specialist for manga and anime, and he wanted to expand into, because that was right at the point when Japanese comics were starting to get a little more early 90s, right. Starting to get a little bit more popular, and I was trying to learn Japanese by watching anime and trying to read some manga and stuff like that. So I didn't really read that many comics, American comic books, a few things like Batman and whatever. But
the main sort of
yeah, a couple mainstream
the mainstream comics.
Yeah, a couple of mainstream
as mainstream as they were back in the 90s.
Right. Yeah. And so I was kind of brought in there and sort of helped set up the sort of anime and manga section of the store. And
How did you learn Japanese? You said you were kind of learning it from anime and manga, but
well, I first started getting interested in learning it when I was in university as a music major at FSU at the beginning, and my koto teacher, the Japanese harp teacher, she was American, but her husband was Japanese. She had lived in Japan for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And so I started taking private lessons in Japanese with him once a week. And so from there, when I left, I left Florida State just to be a working musician. The band I was working with was making money, and we were playing a lot. And I was tired of being in school, so I just left and started playing. And just kept studying on my own and really focused mostly on kanji while I was in the States. I mean, for a long time being here.
Good idea.
Well, yeah. I mean, for a long time, when I first came to Japan, I could read a lot better than I could speak.
How would you suggest, if someone was saying, I'm really interested in Japan, everything Japanese, I want to learn to speak Japanese, how would you suggest, one thing you teach English to people who don't speak English, and you learn Japanese. What would you say is the best way? Obviously, this is no shortcut.
There isn't. But spending time, you have to spend time on it.
What is the best way? Would you say?
What I say to students learning English is, in my opinion, you should learn your second language the way you learned your first. Mm-hmm. Okay. What the mistake that people make is they get in, they dive into grammar for their second language. And okay, what are all the grammar rules here? And it's like, but that's not going to really get you speaking the language.
What your objective is. Do you want to learn to write? Yeah, learn the grammar. But if you want to learn to speak, if you want to live,
if you want to communicate in the language,
if you want to go to a foreign country and survive,
you gotta, because the language is never exactly like it is in the textbook. But the way I see it is, like I said, the way you learned your first language. Okay, so think about how you did that, right? You were little, you heard mama say something, and when she said that, something happened. Okay, so this is the result you want. That's the phrase you use. You heard mama use it, you try it. Okay? If you get it right, you have the right result. If you get it wrong, people laugh at you or something else happens, and you learn, and then you learn the right one and you go. So basically just trial and error. Yeah. You learn, because you can't translate English to Japanese or Japanese to English. It just does not translate. Yeah. It's a different brain. It's a whole different mindset.
Yeah. You can come fairly close. You can come in the approximation, but there are things that just will not.
It's a different approach to language. It's a different mentality altogether. So what I say is think of the idea that you want to communicate. This is the concept that you want to communicate. Okay, and this is how we say it in English. How would you communicate that concept in Japanese? Okay, not those words, not translating and worrying about the grammar. Okay, we'll put the verb over here. No. Here's the concept. How do you communicate that idea in Japanese? Okay. And I would recommend, well, of course, kanji. I mean, if you're going to get into Japan, you've got to, first of all, of course, hiragana and katakana. Yeah. You've got to get those down. You've got to get those under your belt.
But that's basically a memory game.
Yeah, it is. Well, all of it is. Yeah. I mean, well, even kanji, too.
To a certain extent.
Yeah. And
but, I mean, with hiragana, the thing is that, the basic alphabet, you know all the letters. But with kanji, after a while, I don't know if you've had this experience, but after a while, you can tell how something is read, even though you don't know it.
Kind of, yeah.
You get the instinctive sort of knowledge of these are the characters that are built, put together to make this character.
Right.
It's probably read like this.
Yeah.
And 7 out of 10 times, it'll be right.
It'll be right. Yeah. If it's got the little bird symbol there, well, it may be sort of a toe. If it's got this over here, it might be a shoe, right? Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. But then they always throw you a curveball with these names and things like that, which are completely
names are
bizarre.
Yeah,
yeah,
names,
yeah, completely.
Oh, God. Yeah. Speaking of going back to the Yutori, the sort of weird names that have cropped up. There are a lot of weird.
You get a lot of pseudo English names. Yeah. I mean, I had a kids' class where two kids were named Joe. With kanji.
Well, Joe is that one's That one's fairly old. Joe is it? Fairly,
really?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know that.
One, it's like, yeah, back in, I think, the 70s or 60s, one of the biggest manga was Ashita no Joe.
Joe, yeah, I know Ashita no Joe. Yeah. Okay.
But Joe is really common.
Okay. Well, there's girls' names a lot of times. Yeah. Karin is one that you hear a lot of times. Spelled K-R-I-N, yeah. But in Japanese, pronounced Karin. With kanji.
I've seen, like, Erica.
Erica.
Alice.
Well, my niece's name is Erica in kanji, yeah. So. Yeah.
And things like that. Like, yeah, they've been appropriating a lot of names. It's sort of, it's called ateji.
Mm-hmm,
it's like they'll take the approximations, and so it's pronounced the same way.
Right.
And a lot of times it's kind of poetic in some ways, like the way it fits.
Yeah,
the way, like, if you look at the meaning of the kanji itself,
right.
Not just the pronunciation, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you do occasionally get complete misfits, though. I had one lady at a school I was working at, one of the assistant teachers, and we were talking, and I said, "Oh, by the way, what's your name?" And she said, "My name is Rutsu." So that's an unusual name. It's not a common name. Where does that come from? She says, "Oh, it's from the Bible." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah, my mother was a Christian or something." I said, "Ruth, you know, oh, Ruth." Oh, okay. So it was an attempt at the name Ruth. And for anybody who doesn't know, there's nothing even close to a TH in Japanese.
No.
And so they ended up with a TSU sound, Rutsu, which is just way off in left field somewhere. Yeah. So this poor woman has this sort of name, which is neither one nor the other.
Wow.
I get kids in there with kind of bizarre, and I've seen the dictionary of baby names.
Oh yeah.
Japanese baby names that sound like English, you know, and you get all sorts of weird variations.
If you ever have kids in Japan, give them one of those names.
Well, I've got my kids. I don't know if we want to go there, but my son's name is Ken,
which is
English and Japanese.
And in my case, my name's Toshi.
Right.
While it's not an American name, it's not an English name. If anybody sees it written in English, they'll know what it says.
They'll know exactly right.
They won't stumble over it. They won't mispronounce it.
Right.
They'll mispronounce my full name, which is Toshihisa. But
nobody,
not even my parents, call me Toshihisa.
Right. Yeah.
So everybody calls me Toshi. But yeah, I mean, if you're gonna have, if you're gonna have an international, sort of kid like that, give him a name that can be like pronounced in English.
In both, Well, like I did with Mia, with my youngest daughter. Mm-hmm. Mia is a European name, but you can spell it with kanji.
Yeah.
So we spelled it with kanji, so it's really both now. So. But yeah, you know, it's Japan is an interesting place. That's for sure. You know, we always like to say in America, we love to say only in America, right? But I don't know. I think there's a lot more only in Japan.
Yeah.
You know?
Living 17 years, I mean, if you could sum it up. Like what your experience living here, like, you know.
Well, what do they say? What do they say about war? It's, you know, long periods of intense boredom.
Hell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was thinking that it was long periods of boredom punctuated by short moments of extreme terror. I mean, that's something along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you definitely have to have a thick skin being a foreigner in America to certain things, which is interesting because Japanese people in Japan. I'm sorry. Which is something interesting because Japanese people in general aren't very thick skinned about most things.
No.
But you have to have a thick skin. Like a good example, walking down the street in Machida, which is a large suburb for anybody who doesn't know of Tokyo, and a large tour bus is driving by. It's on a large highway there, Machida Kaido, the big main street. And I just happened to glance up at the tour bus, and I notice all of these middle-aged old women staring at me as the tour bus goes up. I mean, blatantly, without any sort of shame. When I looked back at them, and they didn't stop staring. It was just like, you know, and I'm ball-headed, and the sun reflecting off the head, and all these sort of things, and very gaijin-looking. Yeah. And so there was just like this. I mean, I could have been a gray alien walking on the street. And, you know, I've got on trains in the countryside where people are talking, and as soon as you get down here, gaijin, 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 gaijin. You know, and the conversation goes down.
Yeah. And they're always stealing looks at you, or just staring at you.
Or just blatant. Yeah, well, it's not even the stealing looks, it's the, well, they used to call them obatarians. That's a word that's gone out of fashion in Japan.
Yeah, that was a 90s term.
Yeah, that's sort of a 90s term. It's just such a great word, though, you know. For anybody who doesn't know, the Japanese title of Dawn, Night of the Living Dead,
yeah.
was Battalion, or in Japanese pronunciation, Battalion, like real battalions of zombies, right?
Yeah.
And an Obasan is this...
is the term for a middle-aged woman.
Middle-aged woman, usually with blue hair or something, some kind of short, noisy.
Short, like married to a few kids.
Yeah, somewhat troll-like.
Yeah.
And they travel in packs,
yeah.
or herds,
yeah.
or prides, depending on how you look at it.
And then Obatarian was basically a slang sort of word.
Yeah,
for
these packs of little short curly-haired women with purple hair going. Well, what it's like is the old Bugs Bunny cartoons where this Tasmanian devil shows up.
Oh yeah, and yeah, they're ruthless.
Oh yeah, well yeah. Another anecdote here. Living in the countryside where I was on the end of the what's called the Joetsu line, the northernmost line going to central. Honshu, the central main island here.
Nobody understands those words.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's right.
Say whatever you want.
The middle of Japan, all right?
Everybody's going to say he said stuff and stuff, going to stuff.
Okay. Going to stuff. A long train line going into the middle of nowhere. So this place I was living was on the last stop. So you get one train an hour sometimes during the week.
Oh.
And
it wasn't like an unmanned station, was it?
It was a semi-manned station. when I first moved there in the late 90s, they still were taking the tickets by hand and stamping them, and there was no machine. So I'd be standing on the platform sometimes, 20 minutes, even a half an hour, kind of hanging out, waiting for the next train. And nobody on the platform, just me. The train starts to be seen there in the distance, and it's like the Bugs Bunny cartoon. You hear and there's these herd of these little furry troll like. I mean, you guys who have seen Frozen, yeah, imagine that. With an old Japanese woman with purple hair, that sort of thing. Just and they just push you out of the way.
Yeah, it's like the rules do not apply.
No, forget about this American cliche that we have. All Japanese people have such great manners. No. It's just like, and you get pushed out of the way, and there's no seats when you get on the train.
They are people who've learned that the rest of the world will stand aside.
Yeah.
Rest of Japan will sell. Like, if they try that shit in America,
oh yeah,
they'd
no,
be losing
no, no,
teeth.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like,
yeah,
they,
yeah, no,
they,
but...
they, there are, there's this like this breed of elder Japanese women, or sometimes old men too.
Yeah, yeah.
But generally, like elder women who realize that they can get away with shit.
They can get away with whatever.
And like other people will just suck it up.
Well, that's it. This is such a non-confrontational culture.
Yeah.
That when a confrontation happens, if you act a certain way in Japan, you are normally accepted as that without proving yourself.
Yeah.
And people will just go out of their way to be non-confrontational, even when a confrontation would be a more appropriate response to a situation. Sometimes.
Yeah. People will go. Yeah, they'll go out of their way to avoid.
Yeah.
Something like degrading into anything that might resemble actual. Confrontation there are always those people who will looking to pick a fight, looking for some sort of excitement like that, but they are the minority,
right? Yeah And then you've got just sort of the loonies that occasionally come around. I came across one. I haven't even told you this story here, Toshi. What happened to me last week, I caught a purse snatcher. Last week.
Okay. Stealing your purse or?
Stealing my purse. They're just stealing my purse. I have to slap that boy, steal it. No. rewind that one. Okay, you can erase that part, can't you? Yeah, okay. Well, spank my ass and call me Charlie. I was sitting at this kind of shopping center by Sagami Ono Station, one of the local stations, and had my headphones on because I have the silent brass mute, and I was playing my horn and just practicing with my headphones on. Mm-hmm. And I look up and I see this woman and this kind of pudgy guy sort of struggling. And what's going on? And as I notice her pull up a whistle and blow it, look a little bit closer, and I can see that this guy's got her purse. So I put my horn down, I go for him, and I grab him and get a little pressure point, wrist lock, and stick his face on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then security comes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now security. Now security is all over the place.
Action scenes, then you hear the wave of sirens in the distance.
Right. Yeah. And then the security are these like 90-year-old guys, retired mall cops, mm-hmm. sort of thing, who come up there who, I'm not sure what they could stop if it happened.
Most of them generally have some kind of... Actually, no. Security, no.
Yeah, they didn't have any sort of weapons or anything, including their bodies. Yeah. They were just these little old men in uniforms. And so I think they were quite happy that the big scary gaijin did something, because I don't think they would have been able to. The guy was kind of a bulky guy. So, you know. But yeah, I told you that story.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, so yeah, I mean, you just don't get confrontations. And what happens a lot of times because of that is you're talking about the teenage males here have a tendency to try to get away with stuff because they know nobody's going to stop them.
Yes.
And so that's one of the things as a gaijin, sometimes we have to be the ones to stop them.
Yeah.
We can get away with it because we're gaijin, but you know.
Although there is a current trend in Japan going on right now where youths are doing stupid shit and putting it up the internet by themselves. And being essentially crucified for it.
Yeah.
And it's almost cathartic to watch it happen.
Okay.
Because the Japanese internet, I don't know, the rest of the world, the internet can be ruthless.
Yeah.
And with trolls and whatnot.
Right.
The internet hate machine when it gets going. Mm-hmm. And the Japanese one is small, homogenous, confined, and it is
vicious,
a monster.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was stuff going on where kids were at work. There was one kid who was climbing into the dishwasher, taking a picture of it, putting it on Twitter. There's some kid who there's a bunch of, I forget what was it, a McDonald's or something like that. Some fast food joint.
Right.
Don't take my word, it was McDonald's, but there are a bunch of buns that were throwing out.
Okay.
And he piled them on the floor and lay on top of them and put a picture of that on the internet. And there was one where there was some kid who was sticking a soy sauce, one of those soy sauce
containers.
He was sticking it in his nose, put that on the internet.
And they said, "Mr. Prime Minister, what are you doing? Your constituents won't like this."
Yes. And there was ones where guys who are obviously underage, but they've got pictures of them smoking
Like
that. And they get crucified.
Really?
Their names come out, their addresses come
out. Okay.
Where the thing was, where the photo was taken comes out.
Wow.
In no time. And the store, and that's the thing, is generally in those cases, if somebody does something bad at the store, it's the store that gets the brunt of their, some stores have closed because of shit like that.
Right.
And there have been other cases where the guy who did it, there was one guy who was caught with a photo of him smoking.
Okay.
And he was underage. So he got kicked out of school. His parents subsequently divorced. He lost all of his friends.
Really?
And it was just whoa. It was kind of overkill.
Yeah, that's a bit
But his immediate response was you fuck all you assholes. I'm going to come, I'll never forget this. I'm going to get even somehow. And just the punishment was a little severe, but you should have learned your lesson.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's the type of thing that results in some of the psycho crime we get around here. I mean,
talking about this earlier.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but yes, Japan, it's a very safe place. Mm-hmm. It is generally in terms of crime, very, very, very low.
Yeah.
But when crime does happen,
It's generally unpredictable and just psycho. You don't have the motive. Yeah, you don't have a logical motive a lot of the times. When I first came here, I remember seeing on the news a story about a teenage boy who broke into this lady's house. She was pregnant. Murdered her. Of course, she went into labor, premature labor. He killed the fetus when it came out. And when they asked him why, he said he just wanted to see somebody die.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no motive. There's no,
It's there's one been recently with a girl in, I think, Nagasaki who killed her classmate.
Yeah, 16-year-old girl.
Yep. Killed a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And that whole thing is just
pretty off the charts. And she had given sign after sign after sign.
That's another thing. It's just because there, Japan is, I don't think Japan is just not used to it. Because there's that feeling of safety that they have that they just let their guard down, I guess.
I know with mental illness, Japan still doesn't know how to deal with it in general.
Depression is still not recognized.
Yeah. Well, for example, I'm not going to give any family names, but I know of a family that has a retarded, severely retarded son who is, literally locked away. they don't talk about him.
Oh,
they don't mention him.
Is that like not?
He doesn't exist. He doesn't exist. Yeah. There's no external help given or anything like that. There's no sort of infrastructure for your families or mental illness. It's just you have some kind of defect in your family and you hide it away and you pretend it doesn't happen. You put your head in the sand and
mental,
pretend it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Physical disability has gotten better.
Yeah,
it's
gotten much
better in the
recent
years.
Much better. Even since I've been here.
Yeah. Mental disability is still, that's a mark of shame. That's like, that's like, you know, the scarlet letter. You just don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And there's not, so like I said, people aren't coming forward to kind of get these people the help that they need and to give them maybe the life that they need. They're just sort of locked away in a closet and dealt with within the family and not talked about, not acknowledged to outsiders. I mean.
Yeah, I work in a, not the karaoke place that we met, but I work in a different karaoke place and there's this kid who basically comes by and he obviously has some kind of mental problem. Like, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but he obviously has some kind of social maladjustment where he just, he'll come and he'll just stick around. He's like a lurker.
Right.
Like he'll stick around, and whenever there's a girl at the front desk, he'll try talking to her and like trying to ask her how much her stockings cost. Like, just weird, creepy shit like that.
Yeah.
And I've had to like basically like grab him and tell him like just stop doing that shit.
Right.
Like I've Japanese tend to avoid confrontation, but like I was just like, fuck that, this guy.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, we've had people who quit because he wouldn't stop coming.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Well, again, another story. I'm riding a train from Machida to a place called Isehara, where I was working in the afternoons. So there's hardly anybody on the train. And I'm sitting on one side, and there was a schoolgirl, I guess high school age, in uniform, sitting across from me. And so coming down the train, you get these guys at train stations. They hang out at train stations a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And generally, they have a red backpack on, and they go skipping through the train station going, and making strange sounds. And so this guy, one of these guys, is walking down the aisle of the train, and he's clicking the little plastic handles that hang from the roof, you know, to hold on to while the train's moving. And he's just walking on, clicking them together, ting, 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 going, ting, ting, right? Coming down the train. Notices the high school girl kind of stops, comes over, sits next to her, and stares right at her, okay, right across from me. Okay, so the first thing I do is I lean forward. Okay, he touches her, I'm going for him, right? You know, because this poor girl was just, you know, you could see her start to break out in a sweat right there. And so after a couple of minutes, she got up and walked into the next car. And so he's leaning over, staring at her as she's walking away. And the next part's pretty gross. Shall I continue? Well, I mean, it's not like super gross. I mean, we're Americans. We can handle it.
I think you know what's going.
Yeah. Yeah. So he watches her walk down the train. Mm-hmm. After she gets sort of out of sight, he looks back, leans down, and sniffs her seat. Yeah.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, okay. Well, the wiring is a little off there.
Like, getting back to that person I was talking about, but the thing is that, like, they... Japan's only way of really dealing with the people with mental disabilities like that is to either, like you said, shut them away in a vault, or let them run wild,
or pretend that they're they're kind of
like the person I was talking about. Like, we've had to call the cops on him,
right?
And his parents, it's like his father has come and like. And this guy's an old man,
right?
And he just comes and like apologizes, you know, bowing, apologizing in tears, you know, sorry for the trouble his son has caused.
Right.
But the kid keeps
coming back. He doesn't do anything about it, and there's no place to take him. You don't have the sort of community centers or things like that can take care of people like that. Yeah. So. Yeah, well, again, I think that's part of sort of Japan's adjustment to a larger world. And
I guess Japan, like, wants everything to be normal.
Yeah, well, that's it.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, confrontation outbursts are seen as not normal and, like, forbidden. So, like, as a whole, Japanese people basically sort of internalize their stress.
Yeah, until it explodes at some point.
And so, or they have some kind of stress relief, which, is generally like karaoke, golf, or...
Or drinking like a fish, yeah. And, you know.
Or a combination of all three.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I have to deal with every Friday fucking night.
Yes, yeah, yeah, no doubt, especially on the weekends.
Thank you for vomiting in the sink.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt, yeah. Well, you know, going back to my English students, I mean, I can't tell you the huge percentage of people you ask, what's your hobby? Drinking. Any other hobbies? Sleeping.
Yeah.
And you have how many kids and a wife? And, and you know, you work 10 hours a day and then go out with your colleagues every night and get drunk and you come home. And what are your kids' names, by the way? You know, and they sit there for a minute to think about it. You know, it's like, great. And you wonder why your kids are having problems in school and these sort of things. So.
And Japan is actually, it's finally, I think even now it's still like, being a geek, being a otaku, has finally sort of become the norm. Like,
more accepted, yeah.
The sort of extreme, like, there's still a line. Like,
oh, yeah,
if you
sure.
read manga, if you like anime, if you play video games is finally, it's coming.
Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah,
the norm.
Yeah.
That's part of the lifestyle, that's part of the society. Yeah. Manga and anime have always been part of society, but at the same time, it was just like, it's expected that you read them, but it's not expected that you love them.
Right. Yeah, again, there's that line.
Yeah, you know? And now that line has sort of shifted.
Mm.
You're allowed to read, you're allowed to watch, you're allowed to love. You start collecting and you're sort of getting into the gray area. Like if you start buying paraphernalia, you're starting to get into the gray area.
Well, you got that Trekkie Trekkers sort of thing. Like,
you can watch Star Trek, but once you dress up in the suit, you know, you're on, like by Japan standards, once you wear the suit, wear the uniform, you're, you know, there's no saving you sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm not going to go into that. I'm just going to, I'm... Yeah, somebody who's been on the Sci-Fi Channel dressed like a Klingon, I'm going to shut up now.
But wait a minute, what? No, I'll hear about this later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later, yeah.
But it's. I mean, you're allowed to maybe, like, if it's a mainstream, like something like the from Jump Comics, One Piece or Naruto, or Bleach, if you have, like, a little charm on your
bag. Oh, yeah, everybody's got stuff like that.
Or something on your cell phone, or, like, a sticker, that fine. If you start buying figures...
Mm.
Getting dangerous.
You're borderline.
And then once you lose connection, and people who have developed a stronger connection with the two-dimensional than the third dimension, the second dimension, the third dimension, then you're ostracized.
Yeah. Well, then you have, you know, talking about a different, little different branch of otaku, and that is the sort of girl group otaku, which is a whole other, you know, AKB48 otakus, the idol otakus, which is actually more scary, I think, in a lot of ways, when they're 50-year-old businessmen.
That's really weird. Like, I'm like sort of 20% okay with it, 80% not okay with it. Like, I think, like, they do produce catchy, fun music. And do, like, they do, in terms of, like, general morale for society, they do have a positive, they do nice things. The members are, a lot of them do active, like...
Do they?
Okay. You know, active, what would you call, like...
Community
active, service sort
community
of, like, activities.
Stuff. Yeah.
Good
okay.
thing, you know,
when they're not shaving their head for having a boyfriend, something that came up all back.
That's part of the 80%, like, the poison.
Yeah.
The
poison,
like, the cultivating a sort of obsession.
Girl videos in their underwear and,
the objectifying sort of thing. That's, I mean... Yeah, it's and the way it's exploited is really
Well, I've heard some really nasty rumors about the guy that put all those things together.
His
pedophilia tendency. I can't remember his name, but
it's not Tsunku or
no, it's not Tetsuya. Yeah, no. He's out of business since he got caught plagiarizing. But
more older girls.
Yeah, he just plagiarized 80s American songs and gave them to Amurami.
His focus was not the prepubescent underage.
No, it wasn't the sort of pedophilic. Yeah. This guy, I've read a couple of things about him, and he's pretty scary. I mean, I wouldn't let him near either of my daughters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I just being somebody with two daughters, I mean, that's not the sort of role model that I want my kids, aspiring to. Well, my oldest daughter went through the phase
I
in
remember the
elementary
time. I
school.
was, yeah,
Yeah.
we got to know each other around this time, and we were talking
Right,
and.
yeah, and I had to take her to the store where they're all their merchandise is sold there in Akihabara a couple of times. I couldn't go in. It gave me hives. I had to stay out. I went into, anaphylactic shock just walking through the door. Acute, or what, I don't know, what would you call it if you're overabundance of sugar in your bloodstream? Yeah,
Diabetes.
kind of diabetic. Yeah, kind of a diabetic seizure. But she's over that now, thank God. And I'm getting my little girl out of Japan and before she'll notice.
Hopefully, yes.
Well, yeah, yeah, I mean, the female, this is a whole other topic, but female role models in Japan, for somebody who has female children, are a bit frightening.
Yeah.
The clueless, bimbo-ish,
There are
cutesy
only, well,
sex
it's, yeah,
toy sort
it's,
of thing.
there aren't that many strong female role models, and the ones that
No.
are tend to be like a little too overbearing, sort
Yeah,
of.
again, extremes. Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, of course, in Western culture we have the Miley Cyrus twerkings and all this other kind of stuff that if you've got a girl child, you're just banging your head against the wall. But it's not quite as pervasive, I think, as it is in Japan. And but
So that's life in Japan
yeah,
there.
there's life in Japan, all right. It's an interesting place.
But I wouldn't
And
want to live there for
well,
17
for
years.
17 years. Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it was a kind of situation. I won't get into any details, of course, but personal situations where I needed to stay and I needed to stay some more, and then something else happened that kept me staying and that sort of thing. But
Yeah, you're getting out. You're flying the coop.
yeah, I'm going back to the States in April
Yeah.
and starting a business and that stuff. So
Yeah.
but well, I mean, Japan is what it is. I mean, if you come with my problem, I think with when I had quite a bit of culture shock when I first came here. Again, being a native Floridian, going to a place where there's snow on the ground for 7 months, even though I did spend time in Minnesota, it's still not living in it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Most people equate Japan with like the city, but Japan is
Yeah.
interestingly, look, Japan is sort of lengthwise, it basically covers a
Yeah.
good portion of the of like the what would you call it? The it's like the Hokkaido, the northern
Right.
island, is basically around the same, I don't know if it's
Just
latitude
around,
or
yeah,
longitude, but
around Vancouver or
yeah.
Washington, that sort
Around
of.
that much, so
Yeah.
they get snow, lots and lots
Lots
of
of
snow,
snow. Yeah, it's
massive
freezing there.
countryside, very like Japan has this image of being very compact,
Yeah.
But
Well, it's just
Hokkaido is
the living
very
areas are
vast.
compact. You've got this it's a volcanic island. I mean, you've got this row of mountains down the center, and the areas that you can actually live in are sort of limited. So,
And but like on the other extreme, the south, the Okinawa
right,
and
yeah.
Kyushu, like the southern
I love
areas are about.
Okinawa,
It's
yeah.
about like what's like about the like the same. Would you say about Florida?
It's a lot like Florida. I mean, the trees,
Yeah, the
the atmosphere,
climate-wise. So
climate-wise, it's a lot like Miami in
climate-wise, the
South
entire
Florida.
country has this huge variety. Of
Oh
course,
yeah,
all of it's
great.
humid.
Oh
So,
God, yeah, like a rainforest. Yeah, it's extremely humid.
we just went through the rainy season.
Yeah,
We just got quote unquote out of it, which looking outside right
right now,
now,
yeah, it's well,
you
we've
wouldn't
had
know it.
typhoon after typhoon hitting it this year, and we're getting the kind of a tail edge of one right
And
now.
apparently, like, yeah, if you want to visit Japan, don't visit this year. Because apparently this summer, shit. Apparently, like, I saw a weather report where it was like, from 8 in the morning to 12 midnight would be over 30 degrees centigrade.
And it's again, if you look at the numbers and just translate it into Fahrenheit, it doesn't seem that bad, but you're not taking into account that deep humidity
Yeah,
that
you're
you get here.
like,
It's just,
if it's dry, you lose that, like even if it's hot, that heat, you don't retain it because you lose it in the form of vapor, like your sweat or whatever, like vapor coming off of you. But like with humidity,
Yeah,
that
well,
shit's sticking
well,
around.
it's a different humidity too, because Florida's humid. I mean, South Florida especially is very humid, but In Japan, it's like the analogy I always use. It's like a wet electric blanket laying on top of you.
Yeah.
It's just this. There's a thickness to the air that's almost hard to breathe at times.
Yeah. Well, at the worst times, yeah. There. This Japan is the like being in Japan. Like I hung out in Texas, and like Japan is the only. It was the only time I've ever like been lying in the shade, not doing anything. And still, like, sweating like and crazy. Like, just can't stop sweating.
Yeah.
And just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, you just, you know, you sweat like a white lady in church, as they say. So.
Yeah. And this is another story for another time. But Japan just, like, really bad on the home appliance front, the home comfort front. This is something, I shouldn't get too much deep into this because this is going forever, but Japan, like that sexism, the sort of male-female inequality extends to the home life too.
Oh, yeah. That is a big conversation.
Yeah, in what is available. I'll just say it shortly. Japan does not have central air conditioning, cooling, or heating in homes.
No.
I mean, you must live in a really nice place to have central air conditioning.
Right.
It's generally room to room.
Right, right.
Heating and cooling.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, business offices centrally air conditioned.
Yeah, generally.
Wonder why.
Business comes first. Yes. Japan is definitely a business.
A dishwasher is a luxury. You generally wash by hand.
Yeah. Dishwasher is called a husband.
Yeah. A dryer... what's a dryer?
Yeah.
Things like that. So, yeah, a lot of the home stuff is very, very, very back in the 90s,
80s. Yeah.
In terms of technology, definitely. While stuff in the office is, you know, front and center.
Right.
But, yeah, that's another story to get into depth for another time.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's like any place else. Like I was saying, if you don't come with certain expectations, I think you're better off.
Yeah.
And be careful about believing all of the cliches that we hear in America. Like, I was watching a podcast. I don't know if I can mention the guy's name here. A YouTube podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned the guy's name. It was Stefan Molyneux. He's a Canadian guy. Who is very sort of, I'm getting too deep into this, but material realist sort of thing, kind of guy. And makes some good points now and again, kind of goes off the deep end, like analyzing Frozen as this horrible end of society over-feminist, which, you know, that's another story again.
It's
Gloria Steinem meets Disney, but...
It's got its good parts, it's got its bad parts, but it's not like...
But anyway, so he was talking about... parent raising and mentioned something about, in Japan, they raise their kids much better than that. It's like, no, Stefan, you have not lived here, pal. No. Believe me, the kids that I teach on a regular basis, I mean, I have, I don't know if I have a single class. I have 15 regular classes of kids between the ages of 1.5 and 12 in my regular schedule this year, not counting kindergartens and things like that, but just at the conversation school. I don't think I have a single class where I don't have at least one psycho boy whose parents can't control him and just, you know,
not that, not for lack of trying, but just...
Well, no, sometimes for lack of trying. Well, they said, what can we do? I mean, he rips things off the wall, he killed the cat. I mean, what are we supposed to do? You know, this sort of knee-jerk, weak-kneed, spineless approach to parenting, which is very prevalent here, especially with boys. So, I mean, you know, I have to deal with these people. I mean, I have to deal with these people's kids on a regular basis. And never hold Japan up as some paragon of virtue when it comes to things like parenting we're talking about laws and safe. Yeah, Japan is a safe country, but also crimes are very underreported outside of Japan. Very much so. It's not the, you know... Where absolutely nothing ever happens in Japan, like we sometimes think about in America. We think, you can do anything in Japan any time of the day.
Going back to like when the crimes do happen,
they're real creepy because you can't really predict them.
Yeah, the creepiest one I could remember was the you came here in what
97. Yeah.
So that was you definitely heard about the fallout. From the Sakakibara Seito
Which one was that one now?
Okay, it's about, I think he was either junior high, I think it was a junior high school kid
mm-hmm.
who killed an elementary school kid and stuck his head, decapitated it and put his head on school gate so he would be
yes,
noticed.
Yes, I do have a vague, horrible memory of that.
Yeah, that, holy shit. And that was like,
you know,
during the summer vacation when I was visiting from college.
Right.
And that whole thing went down.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, you get the, you know, the, again, you're talking about social pressure and things keep it in. They keep the emotions in, keep them in.
And then
you get kapow and explodes and somebody runs in through a train station with a knife and starts stabbing people
which
out of nowhere,
happened.
Which literally happened in Ibaraki.
Somebody in Akihabara who drove their car through a crowd of people and then got out and started stabbing people.
Well, you know, there's many a times when I've said, I'm so glad Japan doesn't have guns.
Yeah. Gun control works. That's what I believe.
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
you do get those fringe freak out crazies, but the death count is kind of less than
but it's a lot less. I mean, if that guy had been able to drive into Akihabara with a gun and start shooting people, there would have been a lot more casualties and
a
lot more mayhem.
We just created a lot of enemies by saying this.
I don't care. Yeah. You know, I mean, I deal with the NRA and the rest of this crap that we have to deal with in America. Still living in the 18th century where we got to protect ourselves from the British here, boys. Come on. What if them communists come and start trying to take our guns away? Don't take our guns away. You know? I'm that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's primitive, very primitive thinking. You don't give a box of matches to a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
All right.
And I mean, like, I'm not against people having guns,
mm.
but I am very much for controlling it.
Controlling
like
who
sort
has
of make,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, you've got to walk that line between a fascist state and freedom, but you've got to, common sense has to come in there at some point.
Yeah.
And again, like I say, I mean, you know, you don't give a weapon to somebody who's mentally, spiritually, emotionally immature, too immature to know how to properly use it. Like the guy who shot that Japanese kid who was trying to go to a Halloween party several years ago, and you know about that.
Right.
And he was walking up to this redneck guy. He had his hands up and everything, and the redneck shot him. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, I spent a lot of time in North Florida. I have no great love for that kind of thing here. I don't want to get anybody upset here, but you know, I mean, let's
Florida,
praise the Lord and pass the ammunition.
Yeah. Yeah, Florida.
Yeah,
has
North
its,
Florida.
Has,
yeah,
yeah. Florida has its own
craziest.
But
oh boy,
yeah,
that's another podcast.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm. So yeah. I mean, yeah, that's Japan for you.
Yeah, man, that is a unique place. And if you're interested in coming, come. You know, just come without a lot of expectations.
Yeah,
take things as you go. Don't take it personally. The things that will, because you will be, you know, a subject of prejudice. But 99% of the time, the people don't even know they're being prejudiced. They don't even think of it that way. It's not. It's just like, well, of course not. You're not Japanese. You couldn't possibly understand this concept or that concept, or you couldn't possibly be doing this. And you know, I know the.
Of course,
the
interesting enough, like there have been conversations I've had about movies that, like certain concepts, like a lot of people I talk to, just it does not register.
Yeah.
Like certain popular stuff, like the Twilight movie series was not as big in Japan as it was stateside, obviously.
No.
But it does have its fan base.
Mm-hmm.
It does, but like I've talked with people who, like, you know, who went to see the Twilight movie and Twilight movies, and I was just like, you know, but what about these like the way it like talks down to women, how it treats women, it's extremely sexist. It's like, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, exactly.
And in one case, the person didn't even like, it wasn't the, like, I didn't notice that thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the blank stare.
Right.
Just like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Like, what are you saying? Sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, we were getting into briefly, we talked about Frozen, the huge, huge phenomenon here in Japan.
Yes.
I mean, just to the point where it's just like, you know, let me go. Don't want to hear this song anymore.
God.
Oh my God. God, talk about overkill.
Don't tell me about overkill.
I don't even want to think about that. Yeah, well, where I work, the school, one of the schools I work at, they have the play over, you know, over the intercom. They only got the four songs from that thing, and they just play it over and over and over. And my kids love it, so they've got the soundtrack, and they play it, and it's just, you know.
It's a good song. I'll give it
the first thousand times you hear it, you know. It's
that's
just,
the thing.
After a while, it's just like, you know, stick an ice pick in my ear. But you know, and that has definitely, I mean, there are a lot of social connotations in that movie, some that some people might see as positive or negative, but... you know, the students that I talk to, in lessons, we talk about movies and talk about that. I mean, I don't think they catch much of any of it, of the gender roles where, oh, okay, well, only the women were the strong characters. The men were either crooks or bumbling, you know, and this sort of thing. Oh, really? It's, yeah.
Well, I think, honestly, after like all this, up the stuff that's come up until now,
yeah,
it was a good change. It was a breath of fresh.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there, in that sense, the idea of, well, okay, the true love wasn't a sister. I mean,
my favorite part of that whole thing. We're spoiling it. But
yeah, I know. Well, everybody,
I'm spoiling the Frozen, but my favorite part of the movie was the fact that like the little sister does that whole Disney princess thing where she falls in love at first sight and like they plan to get married in a day.
Right.
And then the whole thing just basically says, yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
That whole concept is fucking bullshit.
That was a nice sort of transition into more 21st century thinking there. Yeah.
It's just like that stuff that Disney has been selling up until now.
Right.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that was a good message there. And the fact that, well, you know, my wife has a younger sister. So she and I said, yeah, it's a sister movie. You know, if you're a woman and has a sister, go see this movie with your sister.
There's another latest Ghibli movie. Oops, bumped in the mic. Latest Ghibli movie. Mm-hmm. When Marnie Was There.
Okay.
I don't think it's like a ripoff of Frozen because it's not a ripoff of Frozen. It's got a source material.
Right.
But it's about there are two female protagonists and their relationship, their friendship sort of thing. And you could say that Ghibli is trying to, you know, Get on the Disney bandwagon. Well, they've already gotten onto it because they're already they're practically part of Disney. But actually, like this, it takes them 2 years to make one of these. It takes them 2 years to make a single one of these animated movies. So yeah, they were working on it pretty much simultaneously.
So. Well, I mean, that's getting at also another issue about Japanese culture where you find closer relationships generally between two women than between a woman and a man, even if they're married.
Yeah.
You know, you find a lot of distance between the genders emotionally, I think, in Japan more than in most Western countries. And so, especially...
Well, a relationship between a woman and a man is expected to be romantic in a lot of cases.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Or proto-romantic.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it seems like that there's, you know, you have the sort of romantic or sexual aspect of it, but not the deep friendship, you know, between the couples. It seems to be very rare when you have that, where you think of,
outside.
Where you have, you know, a married couple that consider each other their best friends, like sort of the ideal in a Western culture.
Yeah. Like, my friend has been, my friend who's, his girlfriend he's her first boyfriend, and he's been, I won't mention names and I'm trying to protect his privacy, but this is kind of private, but nobody knows who he is. And nobody who's listening knows who he is. And this is never going to get back to him, but
I'll tell you later.
No, the thing is that,
tune in later.
He's currently trying to get her to be his friend and like be her own person. Their relationship, whenever they meet up, whenever they, you know, hang out, they don't have to do everything together. He's trying to instill in her the fact that she can be her own person. It doesn't have to be about, you know, adjusting her hobbies to his.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She can have her own hobbies that he can't get into.
Right.
She can have her own friends. Mm-hmm. She can, you know, and that's you know, they share a bond.
Right.
But that's different from the bond she shares with other people.
Right.
But it's like, that doesn't mean it supersedes everything else.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he's
more mature, total mature relationship. Yeah.
He's been trying to do that, you know, to get into that. And I think a lot of people don't get that.
No. No, they don't.
They go into relationships expecting that sort of Disney princess eternal bond.
Yeah, well, women here from a lot of experience, I have to say, two marriages and a lot of stuff in between, tend to be pretty emotionally immature compared to Western women in general.
Yeah.
A lot of Japanese women I found are basically looking for daddy 2, daddy 2.0, just somebody who will give them money, give them some kind of security, maybe, you know, make some help them make some babies, and then kind of go away and leave me alone. Yeah. Give me money. Go away. Leave me alone.
That's the sort of old way.
Yeah, but there's, and it's still around. Yeah, it's still around, and it seems like in Japan that in general, of course, the closest relationship seems to be between two women as close friends. Yeah. You know, and it seems like men, I don't know, don't seem to have as many close relationships between them. Between guys, yeah.
Yeah, there's still that sort of, those guys are really, I've dealt with this. Like, the friend I was talking about, like, people assume that they're gay. If they're really good friends.
Yeah.
People start questioning if there's something going on.
Yeah. It's like, you know, in Western culture, two good guy friends meet each other, shake hands, give a hug, and this kind of thing. And, you know, nobody thinks nobody thinks anything about it. But, you don't see that. Well, of course, Japanese aren't as demonstrative as we tend to be either. So that, you know. But the much more traditionally, much more clearly defined gender roles, gender expectations, at least. But that's breaking down, you know, and it definitely is. I mean, and Japan is something that it's again, extremes. You either have something that comes here and stays for forever, or you have something that changes right when it, you know, and just flows and changes. So
it's its own beast.
It really is. Yeah. They're, you know, it's only in Japan, I mean, in a lot of ways. You know, that's what it is. It is what it is.
All righty. Well, again, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Toshi. It's been fun talking to the stick here.
Talking to the big black microphone. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you're going to be around until April, so...
Great. And, you know, anytime, you know, you want to do a podcast on Japanese music or something like that, I'll come here and talk to you about... all the people who are going up against the wall as soon as the alien overlords put me in charge of this planet. all the Johnnies, all the girl groups, all up against the wall, first thing.
And hopefully Sarah will reappear from her hunting trip at some time.
Okay, it depends on who was hunting her.
Never thought of it that way.
But, you didn't specify. You said she was on a hunting trip.
When I heard hunting trip, she was going
like Hunger Games or something.
I assumed that she was the one hunting, but
Well, you know. Woo! Get away!
So this has been the Wayward Podcast. We're on oneofus.net. You can email us questions. I'm sorry we didn't get into questions this time. We've gotten a few that I want to talk about, but I guess not at this point. You can email us at waywardpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at waywardpodcast. This has been my good friend Jeff.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you listening to me babble on incoherently.
And I am Toshi, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Toshi.
Sarah, Jesus, where the hell have you been?
I've been on a hunting trip.
I know. I haven't heard from you in days. Where were you?
You know, I can't tell you that, but I'm really close to finding Mom's killer.
Do you mean the red-eyed demon?
No. The purple-eyed demon. You know the one The one that likes to serve kids Kool-Aid.
And when were we brother and sister again?
I'm your father, Toshi! God damn it!
Oh, okay, so you're back. So we managed to get you back. I was actually afraid that we wouldn't get you this time, and it'd just have to be me and Jeff, but...
But you know, I can't let anyone else be the center of attention.
That's true.
As far as I'm concerned, this is not the Wayward Podcast on oneofus.net. This is the Sarah show. Oops, that's my last name. Shit.
I'll bleep that
Can
out.
Can you bleep that out? Thank you. Yes. My stupid Jewy last name.
Yes, managed to reveal some information that she told me not to reveal. But
yeah,
anyways.
Fuck.
Alrighty.
The Sarah fuck show.
Okay, yeah, I'll bleep that out. So, yeah. Anyways, yeah, actually, speaking of center of attention, you actually managed to be this weekend, apparently. You went to a gay bar and have all the gay people hate you because...
All the gays hate me now.
Because you managed
blacklisted.
To... Blacklisted. Yes, do you want to...
Rainbow listed.
Do you want to give the details on that?
So there's a district in Tokyo called Shinjuku Nichome.
Yeah, I think I took Chris there.
You did?
Well, I'm sorry. No, it's not the Nichome. I took him to the Kabukicho.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Kabukicho is a big red light district. Mm-hmm. Nichome is kind of right next to it.
It's a different kind of district.
It's got a pink and purple and rainbow lights. Yeah, it was my friend's birthday, and we rented out a bar.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really nice. It's called Ohana. It's just some small bar in Shinjuku Kabukicho.
Mm-hmm.
But they were super nice, so that's why I'm saying their name. If anyone wants to rent a bar, all you can drink for 3 hours plus food, 3,500 yen each person.
Which is about $35. Well, think about like... About $40 and you can for per person, and you can have for 3 hours the entire bar.
Yeah, and they made the drinks strong.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah, so it was really fun. Then we all went to the gay district, Nichome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember how we got there. It was pouring rain. And
yeah,
we,
that was right before the typhoon hit.
Yeah, and we ended up at this pretty well-known gay
mm-hmm.
bar called Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
It's men's bar.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they're pretty okay with women coming in too. Some of the places.
Maybe not anymore.
Well, so there's like one. Okay. The bartenders are mostly in their underwear.
Mm-hmm.
Because.
It's.
Why not?
Yeah.
It's a free country. Sort of. Boxer briefs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, so they're there to entice the men and get them to stay and buy drinks and stuff like that. So I managed to find the one straight one. And
working there.
This is why I'm so good at picking up men. I just went up to him and I go, "Are you straight?" And he's like, "Yeah." And then we started making out.
And much to the chagrin of all the other workers there.
Yeah, and I already got a Facebook message from someone who wasn't there saying, "You made out with him? No!"
Because apparently they'd been trying to convert him for a while.
Yeah, he's apparently been working there a long time. And yeah, I'm not going to give anything more away about who he is because I want to protect his identity, but... Yeah.
You made some enemies.
Yeah. It's an interesting night.
Okay.
It's a fun bar. Pretty good music. It wasn't very crowded. I think the more crowded it gets, the more hostile they get to straight people coming in.
So
if you're there on a popular night, they might turn you away if you're not hot enough or if you're not gay enough.
Or you could be someone like me who tends to like get people's gaydar sort of mixed up.
You could get in.
I could probably pull it.
Yeah.
I've done things like that before, so.
If you're there with, and you're obviously with your girlfriend, they might be like, can you not? some of the gay bars are a little uppity. But the bartenders at this place were pretty nice. Okay. Or really nice, you know what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, enough about me and my ways.
Well, wonderful wonderful weekend of making enemies among the gay community.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my weekend, well, it was my girlfriend's birthday, so we just spent some
She's 18, right?
Her age, she's not 18. She's older than 18.
She's older than 18.
I will not say any more than that. Silence. No, no. Anyways.
She's older than me. And I'm 19.
No, no, you're not. Anyways, yeah, so we had some quiet personal time together, which was a lot of fun. We went to a hotel that has hot springs, and they have like different types of hot springs, and one of them is, it's called Gambanyoku. It's basically a sauna by heated rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is that basically, like, by heating the rocks and have them, like, basically radiate heat, it's supposed to, like, they I don't know, the sort of heat they radiate or whatever, it's supposed to have some sort of positive effect. Some of them work for, like, you know, getting rid of stress, you know, building your stamina or something like that. But anyways, you basically go in, you lie on your stomach for 5 minutes, and then you flip over and lie on your back for 10 minutes, and then you go to a room, a cooled room with an air conditioner to cool off, and then you do it again. You lie down on your stomach for like 5 minutes, flip over 10 minutes, and then you go
sounds
cool
like
off.
You're and getting baked.
Yes. Well, steamed. Okay. I sweated more than I have ever sweated before. It was insane the amount of sweat that came out. Didn't think it was possible. I was lying on my back looking to my side because they have an hourglass so you can measure the amount of time that you're, like, mm-hmm. lying on your back or lying on your stomach. And I was, like, watching the sand, you know, slowly trickle down. And then I was turned my head, so I was looking straight up. And this pool of sweat just, like, went off my cheek, down the side of my face and down my neck. I was just like, holy shit. It was just like somebody poured water all over me on the side of my face. It was insane.
I don't get the appeal. I mean...
Well, the thing is that it's really interesting because... Afterwards, like usually when you're out working in the sun or something and you sweat like crazy and then, mm-hmm. you know, you go inside where it's cooled and the sweat dries and it's all sticky and ugly and mucky.
Stinky.
And it feels terrible.
Yep.
The thing is, like, after that, I felt great.
Really?
Like, it wasn't really sticky. There wasn't all that, like, there wasn't really, you know, disgusting residue all over me or anything, and like I actually felt rejuvenated. It was like an RPG or something. I leveled up, my health bar went all the way back up again. I felt great. And so yeah, we were like saying, yeah, we should go back sometime because that was a lot of fun.
Where was it?
It's in it's called Manyo no Yu. It's in Kanagawa. It's not that far from where I live. It's about like a 30-minute, 45-minute
drive. So it's not far from Tokyo.
No. It's like it's close to the border.
Do you like going to onsen?
Usually no, because here's the thing about Japan is that generally onsen, they're on public baths. Everybody like uses the same one, which is for
human
most
soup.
Yeah, which for most Westerners, that idea is kind of like what? Yeah, everybody, you know, you've got a bunch of naked men or naked women all sharing a bath. About Japan is that baths are not for getting clean.
Right.
Baths are for heating yourself up or, like, you know...
Relaxing,
you know, letting some sweat come out, clear out your pores. You're supposed to basically wash yourself off before you go in the bath. You take mm-hmm. a shower, you know, clean yourself off with soap, shampoo, all that. Then you go in the bath, you know, warm up, and then you come out and, you know, just wash yourself off again, then you're done.
Yeah, the traditional Japanese bath is not like a bath you lie down in, and it's very deep, right? So it's supposed to, if you're sitting down, it would go up to your shoulders.
Yeah.
About. But yeah, so like most Japanese houses will have a bathroom.
Yeah.
The toilet might be separate from the shower.
It usually is.
And then there's like a shower / bath, actual bathroom.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to shower yourself down before, soap yourself, shampoo your hair, rinse, and then go into the bath.
Yeah. And so they generally, because you're clean going in and you're relatively clean coming out, the water stays relatively.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't stay, you know, crystal clear, but, you know, it stays relatively clean.
Human skin
clean.
Gets off, yeah.
Yeah. But they don't throw it away immediately. It's like they keep it and they reheat it and then reuse it.
Don't they let the water, isn't there like a vent or something, like a filter? That
there is, most, yeah.
Yeah.
Most baths do.
So it's not
have
like
that.
Stagnant water.
No. But after like, you know, several, you know, a few days, it'll obviously, the water will get, you know, a little murky and you'll toss it out.
A few days.
Yeah. And then you know, they'll fill it again. But they generally don't throw it out immediately, the water out immediately. Yeah. They don't drain it. So.
Apparently some of them you can drink. I wouldn't, though.
Well, some hot springs you can drink the water,
yeah.
But you generally don't want to drink it, the human one that water. People have been bathing in.
Unless you're Hannibal Lecter.
No. That's different, I think.
Delectable.
Yes.
I feel like you'd say that.
But, yeah, some places, like, the water has mineral, because it's natural spring water, mm-hmm. It has minerals in it. And
you know what mineral it has in there?
What?
Sulfur. You know...
You're going into supernatural again, aren't you?
Well, I'm just saying sulfur comes from volcanoes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not left over after possessions at all. So, anyways.
I'm pretty convinced everyone who goes to a hot spring gets possessed. So, Cristo, did that do anything?
No. did my eyes go black?
A little bit.
But anyways.
A little bit.
Halfway. But this weekend, actually, we had a typhoon. Well, it hit the Shikoku area, which is more to the south, but we got the effects of it. And so there was wind and rain.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was at a friend's house and we were watching movies and playing video games, all day, basically. But outside he had like a, I think they're plum trees. I'm not sure, but there was a swarm of dragonflies. It was so freaky. I'll show you a picture when we're done, Toshi. But
yeah, appetite goodbye. Yeah.
Yeah, but like probably 100 dragonflies just swarming over this tree. Like we opened his sliding doors at one point, and I was kind of like, no, close it. It was really weird, and like his cat was acting all weird. Like The viewers / listeners at home can't see it, but I have like
a
cat bite on my bicep.
Yeah,
because my biceps are just like bulging. The cat was like, "Yummy! It looks like a fish." I'm kidding.
Or freaking out.
The cat was like freaking. The cat's pretty sweet. And it was freaking out. It bit me. It was weird. Maybe animals don't like me anymore. And then I got hit in the face by a cicada or something.
Oh God! Yeah, this time of the year, the cicadas is when they're in the mating season and they're all horny and shit, at least they're trying to get laid.
I look like a cicada.
Yeah, and they're flying everywhere and they're noisy as fuck.
And of course, the storm didn't help. Yeah. It just made them go crazier.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Or some of them got caught up in the wind and then they're, you know, you can see their dead bodies are everywhere. And, yeah.
That's
cicadas
the
are
sound
fun.
Of a dead cicada.
Yeah. But anyways, that was my weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I also recorded because I thought you'd fallen off the face of the earth. And
I was on a hunting trip.
We'd never get
I'm trying to find your mother's killer. Damn it. Damn it, you're my least favorite son. I said it.
My mom's
I
dead.
Said it.
My mom's dead. I need to
make, shit.
I need to make a phone call.
You ain't got nobody but me and Dean.
Cass
isn't here yet.
But
and Adam.
Who's Adam?
Exactly.
No one is getting those references.
But, no one.
We actually had some email. That I think at least one of these we can talk about. The other one might make a good topic.
We're going to save for next time because that's a whole other big topic.
Yeah.
But this one, I don't know anything about, so I'll let Toshi talk. But well, I'm going
to
read it.
I don't know all that much is the thing, but I might be able to give one answer maybe. But go ahead.
Okay. This is from Jellio or Helio maybe. Or Jellio.
Jellio.
Hey, guys. Your podcast on oneofus.net is a good time.
Yes.
I plan on trying out the anime Toshi recommended, Infinite
Revias. Yeah.
If I can find it somewhere.
It's apparently, sorry to cut in, you're not finished yet, but cut in, apparently some place has licensed it or has said, apparently they're going to bring it stateside maybe 2015, 2016, possibly. I'm not 100%
sure. So, Haleo, please sit tight.
Yes.
And you will eventually
officially.
Get it.
I mean, there are the fan subs out there and stuff like that.
But we don't promote that.
No.
Continuing. Mm-hmm. What are some good recent Japanese sci-fi films you would recommend? Regards, Julio.
Sci-fi films. Recently, I think the only one that comes to mind is one called Monsters. Have you heard of this one?
Heard of it, yeah. Yes.
It's about two guys. One of them has the ability, it's kind of like X-Men. It's two guys. Mm-hmm. One of them has the ability to control anyone he sees.
Ooh.
And the other one is
I got that ability.
And the other one is basically Wolverine, he regenerates. And the thing is that the guy who regenerates, like the guy who can control anyone, his power doesn't work on the guy who regenerates. So it turns out like he's like, why can't I control you?
They become lovers.
And no, it's the exact opposite. They try to kill each other.
And then they become lovers.
I don't know. Like, I haven't seen it. Like, I actually want to see this movie. It actually looks really interesting.
It sounds interesting.
It's kind of like the whole vampire thing where, like, you know, the vampire and the one person his power doesn't work on. Except for it's instead of becoming a cheesy, stupid, romance, instead of that.
One of them gets M-preg.
Instead of that, instead of, like, them doing the whole romance, stupid, cheesy romance thing, they're actually trying to kill each other. And it's from the promos I've seen, the trailers, it looks pretty interesting. Like there's a scene where you've got a whole slew of people just basically walking off a ledge and, killing themselves because the guy's controlling them.
Oh, so he's a bad guy?
Yeah.
I said that like a Midwestern mom.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He's a bad guy?
Yeah, he's a bad guy.
Oh, who's that guy in that movie?
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah, so he's definitely a bad guy. Cause he can control anybody. He can make them do anything. And so, you know, he does whatever he wants.
Yeah.
But it just happens one time. There's one guy he can't control and he can't figure it out. So the first thing he does is have the guy get run over by a truck. And then the guy comes back. So.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, Monsters. It came out, I think, this year.
Is it based on a manga?
I'm not 100% sure. That's the thing. It's like it came out of nowhere for me, and I was just like, "That looks pretty interesting." And I wanted to see it, and I never got a chance. I think it's the theater run has ended, so I'm gonna have to catch it on DVD. In terms of sci-fi,
so sci-fi, the thing with sci-fi is you, for most cases, you need special effects for anything that's gonna sell tickets. You kind of need special effects. And we've talked about this.
Yeah, Japan doesn't have the budget that Hollywood does.
Yeah.
I don't think even Bollywood does.
Yeah, no. It's really, really surprising because, Godzilla is such an iconic science fiction franchise.
Yeah. We need Matt Frank on here to talk about that.
Okay.
He lives in Austin. He's but he's a guy. Yeah. He shows up on oneofus.net.
Call him on line one. Go ahead.
But yeah, if stuff about Godzilla, yeah, he's the authority on that.
Yeah, that'd be cool to hear what he has to say. I'm kind of just I'm a total layman with Godzilla. I saw the original first one, the American version and the Japanese version. Mm. Yes, there are two different versions. Mm. And then bits and pieces of other ones when they were like on the Sci-Fi Channel on Saturday or Sunday mornings or something like that. But other than that.
So if I were to say quick favorite Godzilla monster, you wouldn't be able to.
Gamera.
Oh, okay. I don't think they've ever shown up together.
Really?
I don't think so. Okay.
It's in the same universe, right?
I can't. Matt, where are you? I can't. I don't.
Wait, which one is friend of children?
That's Gamera.
Gamera is friend of children.
Yes. Godzilla is sometimes friends, sometimes enemies. he's just a force of nature. You can't really depend on him. So.
Yeah, Gamera. The only other one I know by name is Mothra.
Okay.
So, and, yeah, I mean...
But back to sci-fi.
Japanese science fiction, I haven't even seen any, to be honest, other than anime.
The only one recent, like, science fiction, like space science fiction that comes to mind is, like, Star Blazers or Space Battleship Yamato.
Yeah, yeah.
That, the live action, which, it's not bad, but it, depending on how much of a fan you are, you may end up hating people for it.
Yeah, I was kind of interested in seeing it. And the special effects are kind of cartoony, but it works.
It works. It's not bad. They took a page out of the Firefly. The whole far away and then zooming in sort of shaky cam of space
battles.
So
you can't see all the mistakes in our CGI.
The Firefly school of space battles.
But a lot of the Japanese special effects are, like, on par with early 2000s TV science fiction in the U.S. Yeah. Like, there isn't that much difference between what they had in Firefly and what they have now.
Yeah.
And why is that? Is it a budget thing? Is it an innovation thing?
I think more than anything it's a budget thing.
Yeah.
And it's also, it is, I would say, yeah, it's a bit of both. Budget, mostly budget. But probably there's a lot to do with innovation, too, technology-wise.
Yeah. I don't know, because a lot of American CGI stuff is outsourced to France.
Really?
Like, I think Weta is in... No, not Weta, sorry. The Wachowskis studio is... in France, or they've
someone's
done
gonna stuff. Someone's going to correct me. Wrong.
But I know Speed Racer was done in France, because I met someone who was working on it at the time. And he said, yeah, it's a really big, there are a lot of French studios that do CGI for big budget American films. But I'm sure, I mean, France is not like a developing country. It's not like how a lot of American animation studios outsource their 2D cartoons and some 3D cartoons to Korea or something.
Do you know how much Japan outsources their stuff? Because something gives me the feeling that they don't.
I bet they don't.
Which is probably why.
No one can understand the subtlety of Japanese cinema as the Japanese can. I don't know. I mean, there are major film schools here, and, like, they seem to be fairly well-staffed, but I wonder if it's, like... I'm sure they outsource stuff to Korea, because they outsource a lot of stuff to Korea.
Animation, I know anime, Korea and China, they outsource a lot of that stuff, because that shit's expensive.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of movies, CG, I do not know.
But, like, for me, there are, like... so few Japanese films that are interesting, modern Japanese films that are interesting to me. They all seem to have the same kind of plot. There's always the lawyer movie. Then there's the someone has a brain tumor movie. Let's cry and run by a river.
The sad romance.
Yeah.
The on par with like the Notebook sort of like someone. Yeah. Someone really needs to teach Japanese like scriptwriters that I've been saying this for years, but you don't need to kill a character to get an emotional response from the audience.
Everybody knows like the cheapest thing in drama is giving someone a terminal illness.
Yeah.
Other than killing a puppy or killing a child.
Which
terminal
is
illness.
Tropes, but yeah.
Yeah.
Although the killing a child thing is something they rarely do, but generally.
In Japan, yeah.
Yeah.
In
movies, they rarely do that. Hollywood movies, they don't want to piss off parents, but.
Yeah. That's true.
But killing the dog is obviously one way to show that
the horse.
Or somebody's a bad guy, or to get an emotional response of pity.
But the cancer thing is like.
It's prevalent.
Consistent.
In Japanese movies.
Yeah. So I guess because it's fairly low budget, they make a lot of these romantic drama films.
Sorry, going on a tangent, but does Japan have any rom-coms?
That's a good question.
Because I can't think of any. like romantic comedies. I know if they
dramas,
have, they have
the
like,
TV shows.
They have comedies. Could they have comedies? But comedies. Shut up. They have comedies. They have like, you know, weird sort of, you know, crazy slapstick or off the wall sort of comedies, things like that. I know they have romance movies, but I don't know if they have romance rom-coms.
Yeah. I don't, I've never, well, first of all, I just hate rom-coms. Hmm. I cannot rom-com at all. You couldn't pay me enough money to watch a rom-com.
In my age, I've gotten kind of, I've gotten jaded. And
if you say Love Actually, I'm going to slap you.
It's not a bad movie. It's
it is a horrible piece of shit.
Oh.
That is one of the most overrated movies in human history.
Wow.
I would shit on that, that movie.
Wow, okay.
To prove a point.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, Japan doesn't do rom-com. They do for their TV dorama, the TV shows.
The TV serials, I guess you could call them. The soap operas. Yeah, they do have comedy elements. It's generally about two people who generally shouldn't be together getting together.
And someone gets cancer and dies.
Not always. The TV, not always with the TV. Generally with the TV, no. They generally don't get killed. But they're not comedies. They're not funny. There are situational in the sense that it's like two people who you wouldn't expect getting together. But
will they, won't they?
Yeah. But, and that's one of the things, like, every now and then, cause, There'll be some kind of TV series that get really popular and everybody's talking about. And I did that once. I followed one of them. Like, cause people wouldn't shut up about it. I think it was Buzzer Beat. It's about a basketball player, but.
Such a stupid name.
Yeah. But, it was.
I'm Buzzer Beat. Bubba Bee. Well, and I play basketball.
It's the title, not the guy's name. But anyways, it was.
I like my Bee character though.
It wasn't bad, but it was. It was just like,
did somebody get cancer and die?
No. But it's just the thing is like that there was absolutely no suspense for me whatsoever. It's just like, I know everything that's going to happen. The minute that somebody shows up, oh, that guy's the rival. The minute that some girl shows up, oh, there's going to be a scene where they're like talking or they're really close and the girl's going to make a mistake and get pissed at him. You know,
Nandi.
Yeah.
Why did you leave the team?
There's some
old, because I love you.
There's some guy who everybody shits on. That guy is going to be the magical Negro. There's like there's the guy who's going to spout
the magical mystical Japanese.
There's the guy who's going to spout the you know, the fountain of truth. Who's going to like give that that piece.
Is he the tallest guy?
Not always. But there's always that one guy who like everybody's just like, you know, they treat him like shit or he's the butt of every joke, but he's gonna come back and say that one, you know, kernel of truth that's gonna like, you know, make them see realize that they've been living in a world of lies and that their true love is right there all this time.
Just basketball.
Yeah. But anyways, it was Japanese TV series hold absolutely nothing for me in terms of.
Talk about low budget.
Yeah.
Low budget.
Well, they don't have a choice, really.
Yeah, they don't have a choice. It is like the same budget as American soap operas or Spanish telenovela or something like that, where they have a couple sets, indoor sets, a couple outdoor sets. The camera quality is not good at all.
Sci-fi TV, they did have, they do have stuff in terms of like X-Men sort of stories where it's like the real world, modern world, and superpowers. But it's always, the superpower is always limited and budget is also limited. I think there was, why can't I remember what it was called? Nope, I can't remember it. There was a TV series about like, you know, superpowered people and like, you know, sort
heroes?
Of like, it was like, it's like they're like, it's kind of like, it's basically X-Men. They're mutants, and there's this agency that basically, you know, keeps them under controls.
Was it any good?
I have no, it's Spec, that's what it's called. I don't
know. See, that's
know.
A good title.
It's,
Spec.
There have been like two or three movies that have come out, as is generally what happens with any popular TV series that's not a rom or romance TV series. I don't know. The movies seem interesting, but I haven't seen them. I didn't know enough about them, and I was just like, I'm going to need to watch the TV series in order to understand what's going on, and I don't have that time.
Yeah. So, I don't have the patience.
So, sci-fi, Japanese sci-fi, not all that much. It's generally stuff, like I said, the X-Men variety of real world with superpowers.
Yeah.
All that else comes up is Star Blazers.
What about novels?
Novels? They've got a lot of novels. Mm-hmm. But those generally turn into anime.
Why does everything just turn into anime?
Because it's easier that way. Oh. It's cheaper than making a movie.
Have they ever made a Haruki Murakami book into an anime?
Because
he's like...
no idea. Maybe.
He does sort of sci-fi. And apparently his latest book is science fiction? Creeper science fiction? Like,
what's it called?
I'm a Pretentious Dickhole?
No, I don't think that title would pass the censors.
I respect Haruki Murakami,
mm-hmm.
but not to my taste.
Okay. I don't think I've read any of his works, so...
You might like it. Hard-Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World is science fiction, sort of. It's kind of interesting. There are kappa in it.
Okay.
But some of his other stuff, like I've read some of his short stories. I've read it in English and Japanese, short stories in Japanese. His novels are a little bit too much for me in Japan, for my Japanese level, but he does sort of science fiction stuff sometimes. But other than that, it sounds
like they would make, if they did, they would probably be made into either low budget movies or
anime movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because people think of, when you think of Japan, you think of anime, and there's a lot of shitty anime, but there's a lot of good stuff too, and a lot of creative science fiction ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd think that with how common it is for people to read in Japan, it's more common than the U.S. because people commute on trains. They got to do something. A lot of people read. A lot of people check Facebook on their phones, but a lot of people read still. Mm. You'd think there'd be more of that kind of stuff. Science fiction, something. I don't know.
I don't know that much. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Going into sci-fi or sort of fantasy-ish movies, there is one movie that's actually coming out. It's going to be in two parts. It's based on a manga.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually an anime is also coming out, I think, this fall.
Yeah.
It's the Japanese title is Kiseiju. Mm-hmm. The English title is Parasite with a Y. I don't know if you've heard of this.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's fairly well known.
Mm-hmm.
There's a live action movie that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out, I think, in December. I'm not 100% sure. I wrote about it on Kotaku, but I don't remember the date anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But
do you think it's worth it to see it? I might go see
it. I'm very hesitant.
What's it about?
It's about, it's kind of complex. It's about these parasitic symbiotes. They basically, by invasion of the body snatchers, they basically take over a person's brain and fuse with their head.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically turn the head into a symbiote. And that symbiote can change forms. So basically they can change faces. How to describe it? They're living muscle. The head basically becomes one giant thinking muscle.
Okay.
So it can.
When you said muscle, I was picturing like a clam muscle.
No. I'm
hungry right now.
So basically they change forms. They can do things that like they can create blades and things like that. So you end up with this creature with a human body and its head is just like all these blades.
It's very Japanese.
Yes, very much. And
I'm just imagining someone like whipping their head around.
It's,
like,
kind of like that. It's creepy as hell. And I'm getting the one of the major points is that they once they take over the body, the host, they get this instinct, and that instinct is to consume whatever species they've basically taken over. So if they take over a human, they have the instinct to cannibalize other humans. If they take over a dog, that dog eats other dogs. But
if they take over a cake, that cake eats other cakes.
They can't take over inanimate objects. Anyways, the thing is that this main character is someone who basically he gets attacked by the symbiont creature, the larva, I guess you could call it, and it burrows into his arm and basically tries to burrow up to his skull.
Okay.
And he uses a wire to basically stop it in his arm, and it.
Well, he can't use a butter knife.
And it fuses with his arm. So his arm basically becomes one of those creatures.
And then the arm tries to eat other arms?
Well, the thing is that, like, because it doesn't take over his brain, it, for some reason, it doesn't have that consuming instinct.
Yeah.
So it's just a symbiont, with all the benefits of it. It's sentient, so it can, you know, it can communicate, it can learn, and
what does it say? Hi, I'm an arm.
It's the whole story is basically an exploration of looking at human beings from the eyes of someone who is not human. That creature becomes basically the protagonist.
If my arm could talk,
kind of like that,
it would say, "Kill me." the things I've seen. it got weird.
That got weird. That my mind just went to other places it got and weird. Just like if my arm I don't know. I'm not gonna too much information and going dirty places. Clean thoughts. But anyways.
Think about Jesus.
But anyways, the manga
and
was
my arm.
The manga came out in the 90s. It was I think it was a game changer pretty much. It was probably one of the it's in my upper echelon of my favorite manga of all time, and they're going to make a live action movie because that's the thing right now, making live action movies out of all the popular stuff.
So they got to make the special effects really good.
They have to. From what I've seen, they don't look bad, but you can tell. You can really tell that they're special effects. I'll show you the trailer later. Yeah. But I wrote about this on Kotaku, but from what I've seen in the trailer, I'm really skeptical. But trailers lie. You don't know.
Jeez. I'm looking up a picture now. It's fucking freaky.
Yep.
Ew.
Yep.
Thanks for the nightmare, Soshi.
Yep.
Lord.
And I'll actually send you a link to the Kotaku article I wrote about the
style looks like 80s kind of.
Well, the thing is that the manga was we're going long, but the manga was it started out by the artist. He worked alone.
I'm looking at pictures. I have to look away.
Yeah,
I need a picture of something pretty.
Cats, kitties. Dean. Yes. Okay, that's pretty enough. But yeah, he was working alone. Mm-hmm. On it, and so generally, I don't know how much we've talked about this, but when manga artists,
I looked at some of the panels. There's no background.
Yeah, because he was most manga. This is an entirely different topic, but I'll just say it. Like most manga are drawn by a committee of people. You've got the main artist who comes up with the ideas and does the general outline. He does do some of the inking, but he generally has like anywhere between 4, 5, 6, sometimes like 10 assistants who do like the backgrounds, do all the effects. Some people who do the inking, they add the shading, stuff like that. And so this guy was doing that whole thing alone. So a lot of this stuff looks very simplistic, and he was working on a monthly one. But even so, like once per month, it was pretty hard. So
science fiction.
Yes. So I don't know. I can't say if it's going to be good or not. It might end up being really good, but I have my doubts.
It would be awesome if they could keep it in the same vein of being really simplistic and like, no.
I'll show you
This is why they should hire me.
I'll forward you the article later and you'll probably agree with what I have to say. But anyways, Actually, we're kind of going a little long. I wanted to talk about House of Cards, but I guess we can save that for next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Alrighty. So I guess this is going to be our episode for this time. We'll probably be back in a couple weeks.
Our shortest.
Yeah. Well, you and me are shortest.
Yeah. But... longest.
Yeah.
Record.
Yeah. Record breaker. Although we did have that episode, I had to break into two parts.
Yeah.
But well, anyways,
what were we talking about?
Supernatural, of course.
I'm not familiar with that show.
Oh, okay. Well, it's really good. You should check it out. So I guess we'll be going out. I guess this time it's my turn to pick a song.
Yeah.
I've chosen the song "Cross" by Takashi Utsunomiya. He was obviously you're shaking your head, so you don't know.
Don't know who that is.
He was the singer for TM Network.
Oh.
Yes.
I know who that is.
Yes. That was the band. That was by, it was three people. It was Takashi Utsunomiya and Tetsuya Komuro and one other person whose name escapes me at the moment. But
Bob.
Yeah. But they basically split up. They,
Bob St. James.
I think they got back, TM Network got back together officially got back together, but they haven't really been doing anything.
When were they big?
80s? 80s. Yeah. Late 80s. And yeah, they were, and the guy had a very distinctive voice. And so he's been able to continue his work. And so this is the song. Came out not actually that long ago. It's not coming off the top of my head, but I heard it and I was just like, I recognize this guy, this voice. Mm-hmm. It's like, why does it sound very 80s to me and why do I like it? and yeah, it turned out to be the singer from TM Network. So.
I've never listened to them. I mean, I've seen the name, like it.
They're very anime-ish. Like their music is 80s. It's not like that sort of poppy anime song.
Okay.
It's more closer to rock style anime.
I like rock.
But it is, you recognize that it's, like, you can hear it with an, it fits with an anime.
Did they do songs for anime?
Yes. Which? Famously, City Hunter, the TV series.
Oh, that's so early yeah. 90s.
Early 90s, late 80s. So, anyways, I guess that's been our episode for this week. We are the Wayward Podcast. You can email us questions or comments at waywardpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at Wayward Podcast.
Take two.
Okay, at Wayward Podcast.
There we go.
There. I think I got it right. So, and we're on oneofus.net. Part of the oneofus.net world, the World of Us cast.
Yep.
Sort of community. So you can check us out there. And that has been our episode. I'm Toshi.
I'm Sarah, and I'm going back on my hunt.
Why?
Gotta find Mom's killer!
Alrighty. Well, we'll see you next time.